Hello, I'm James Sandy, and welcome to this special programme documenting Finding Joy, an award-winning production about dementia by the country's leading full-mask company, Vamos Theatre. First performed in 2013, Finding Joy has been seen by more than 23,000 people at over 200 performances, and will continue to tour to world audiences in 2019. In this programme, we catch up with some of the actors, staff, partners and talent behind this touring project funded by Arts Council England. I started by speaking to Vamos Theatre's artistic director, Rachel Savage, about how her real-life experience inspired both production and approach. So I'm with Rachel Savage, who's the artistic director and founder, I think, of Vamos Theatre. So, Rachel, welcome.
Thank you very much.
And it's great to catch up with you because you do some really interesting theatre and really interesting theatre projects. And we're here tonight in Bromsgrove, and you've done lots of dates and you've got lots planned. But let's start by talking about Vamos and the Well, I suppose the company, really, and the production. So
sure.
If folks are new to that, what is that?
Firstly, Vamos tells stories that need to be told. There are always stories that I care deeply about. So say, for example, the show that you're going to see tonight is about dementia. The next show in the spring is about post-traumatic stress in the military. The one before was about forced adoption in the 1960s. My next show is called Dead Good. And you can only imagine what that's about. So I always focus on projects that I really care about and I think need to be told. And they're often stories about people who don't have a voice, and they're all given a voice through our full mask genre, which doesn't have words. So full mask means that an actor wears a piece of plastic over their face. They can't speak, they don't speak, and the audience in the first couple of minutes comes in and sits and thinks, why have I come see this? I'm not going to be able to understand a word of it. And within 2 minutes, they're laughing. Within another 10 minutes, they're belly laughing. And then by the end, they've gone through every emotion possible. It's a roller coaster ride. And when we say on a publicity, you'll laugh, you'll cry, we mean it.
So there's a couple of things that I want to just sort of explore. Mm-hmm. And the first is, I guess, the medium in terms of mask and mask theatre. So there are a number of, I think, European groups that use that style, and usually, not exclusively, but usually to tackle some quite sort of controversial or sensitive topics. So how did you come to mask and using masks in theatre?
I started working with a theatre company called Trestle Theatre Company, and then there have been more full mask theatre companies since. Their work often is more farcical, I think, because I came to it from a background of I wanted to go into politics, and my mum said, no, don't go into politics, go into theatre. Kind of the wrong way around, really, isn't it? And so that's why I always tackle more sensitive subjects.
And the other question I wanted to explore from what you said initially was, how do you come to those stories? Are they through personal experience, or are they through your sort of the circles you operate in?
They always have to have an emotional attachment to me, because otherwise you don't care, and you've got to have that kind of personal belonging with the subject matter. Often I read stuff. So say, for example, with the Finding Joy that you're seeing tonight, that was about 9 years ago, and we were performing at the Hereford Courtyard, and the chief exec came to us at the end and said, I love your work, I'd like to make a co-production with you, and which was a huge honour and really exciting. And then he said the theme is dementia. So I started researching, and after 6 months of research, I thought I'd made a mistake, because all of the stories and novels and films and documentaries and films and endless interviews were negative. Everybody's story ended in death, and they were all miserable. And now I'm not saying that dementia is a joyful subject. I know from personal experience that it's not. But what I wanted to do was to find, as I said at the beginning, a story that needs telling, and also to find a way of how do we focus on the finding of the person and the constant looking for any which way to connect with that person, as opposed to focusing on the losing of that person. And it wasn't until I got in touch with an old family friend and found a true story that I found the true story that needed telling. So that's often how I find my pieces of my inspiration. You know, I sometimes come up with the subject matter first, I sometimes decide it, but then go on the track of the research and finding the story. I'm trying to find hope. What I don't want to do is find complete and utter despair in every subject matter that I choose, even though some are really tough, but it's looking for the hope and the different stories. So also within that, I also start to change opinion, because so many people have been to see Finding Joy and then they've written and said, and now the entire family have been to see Finding Joy and now we look after our mum differently. And that's what I'm interested in.
Now there's an element, I think, of the masks, which lends itself in some way to, I suppose, comic or satire performance. And what I mean by that is, and there's always a dark truth or a sharp truth in satire. And I wonder how the masks or the almost cartoon-like appearance help make it more readily accessible with more difficult things.
I think there's a few things about that. You will see a scene tonight where the audience will laugh a lot, and the audience will laugh because they recognise this character, the consultant at the A&E. And it's all based on a true story where Joy had the terrible fall and had to go to A&E, and was examined, and being in examined, so it was Audrey's, the true story that it happened to, she has a handbag, and her handbag is her anchor, and so many women of her generation are very similar. And in the examination room, the consultant was constantly trying to take this handbag away from her, because he was thinking that it was stopping him being able to do his job properly. And it's people laugh and laugh and laugh because, exactly as you say, because they recognise it, and they too have been outraged and hurt by that character.
So let's talk a bit more about Finding Joy, which is, I think, part of, I suppose, a series of exploring joy, if you like,
yes,
or different aspects of
yeah,
joy.
Yeah.
There's a play on
yep.
words. There, but essentially we're talking about a communication perhaps across generations and a supportive relationship that develops in a very serious situation in terms of, you know, dementia and the onset of dementia. And that's quite a common story, isn't it? But perhaps not told too often.
It's a common story. It's a really common story. You know, a million people are going to be diagnosed and living with dementia by 2025. There's over 700,000 carers in the country at the moment looking after loved ones. I think the story that I found in some ways was usual, because it's a love story between a grandchild and a grandmother. And, you know, we recognise those relationships as almost the more joyful and the more, you know, they don't come with the same baggage as looking after.
It's a kind of short circuit, isn't
absolutely
there, around the parents,
yep.
It's that kind of thing.
Yep. And it's based on a true story. So when I found this true story of this, well, it's a love story between Rowan and his mum and his grandmum, Audrey. And he saw that his mum was struggling looking after her. He also had left school and didn't know what he wanted to do, and he was into his mates and his gang and his football, but he could see that his mum was struggling, so woke up one morning and said, I want to become Grand's carer. And so they got him his training, which was 2 days of how to become a carer and a couple of hours in how to become a carer for somebody living with dementia. And thank goodness he was a natural, and he's a natural because of his playfulness, his acceptance, his fun. You know, this young man is, he's young, he's not a saint, slightly anarchic, but he's really good at reading somebody's mood and their body language. And so Audrey, his gran, often didn't know who she was. She didn't know who he was, but what she did know was when that young man walked in that room, her life lit up. And when I used to say to Rowan, how did you learn? And he'd say, my gran taught me everything.
Thank you.
was a story once about a petticoat, and he said, I never knew what a petticoat was. My gran had to teach me. They went to a pub once, had a pub lunch, and at the end of it, Audrey became anxious because she didn't know where her petticoat was. And so she turned to Rowan and said, I need to find my petticoat. And he said, well, that's fine. Let's go and ask the bar lady. So they went up to the bar lady and he said, this is Audrey. Have you found her petticoat? At which point Audrey grabbed hold of Rowan and said, it's not my petticoat. We've lost. It's yours. So Rowan, being Rowan, turned back to the bar lady and said, have you found my petticoat? And that was the world in which they shared play and love and joy, and she lived very happily with dementia. And that's the story that I want to tell, because I think that's what's unusual. You know, there's so often, yes, you find a usual story about the generation gap and the easier loving relationship, but what you don't find is the story of actually, let's keep trying to find joy. And that means find the person and find happiness with that person.
Let's talk a little about how you approach storytelling, because I know there are a number of different platforms, if you like, or styles of theatre. So I guess it's not really traditional, but the traditional approach of, you know, people sitting in an audience, some people on stage, you do some of those things. But you also do, I think, walkabout theatre, and you do workshops and those kind of things, which I think, you can tell me more, but help people explore it kind of in real life almost.
Yeah, our walkabout is fun. I call it almost money for old road, because you go out and you are just naughty, and the naughtier you are, the more wild and wonderful it is. So that's really theatre, mask theatre, walkabout on the streets. So we have our Crimpling Crusaders, who are bossy old ladies that want to put the world to right, and we have our Cheapskate Caterers, who are terrible at catering and can frankly ruin any glorious wedding day. But we also, say for example, have a show called Sharing Joy, which goes into care homes. So we perform on main stages. We tour all over the world, from China to Norway, but we also play in care homes, and we also play at the Glastonbury Festival. So it's a genre. Mass theatre is so accessible that actually it can tour anywhere. So there's not a language barrier. But also, so say for example, tomorrow's performance at the Artrix is going to be a relaxed performance. And that's because we now know that it's a genre of theatre that plays brilliantly and connects and speaks to deaf audiences, audience living with dementia, audiences with learning disability, audiences with post-traumatic stress. So it literally speaks to everybody. So that's why our style of theatre plays to so many different places.
So touring is a big thing that you've been doing, yep. And this is a massive programme of dates, isn't it? And I think you've got some big, I suppose, names on board in terms of other organisations to support you. Tell me a little bit about that, because I guess also every time you perform this, it changes slightly and it's different from venue to venue.
Yeah, absolutely. So on this tour, for example, we'll be touring to the Malvern Coach House, which is a 67-seater, and that's the tiny little theatre where we first built and made and performed the show. To 10 days earlier, we'll be touring to the RSC, and we'll be doing 3 gigs there. And that's been a project, a partnership with the RSC that has been going for the last year, where we have performed Sharing Joy, which is our show for people living with dementia, and we've been delivering our workshops, Listening With Your Eyes. And so finding joy going there will be a culmination of this whole project. And it's just exciting. And this week we also go to Spain. So we go to Spain this week, and then in a couple of weeks we're also touring to Germany. So in one week we might have a relaxed performance, and another show we might then be doing a rural touring gig in a village hall, and then we might be getting on an aeroplane and playing on a made stage in a Spanish festival.
It must be quite interesting how international audiences respond to something like this, because there's no language barrier in a sense. There are some, I suppose, cultural identifiers that people might not recognise. You know, the handbag, for example, will vary in different countries.
Maybe not.
But how have reactions been abroad to
Yeah, I find it fascinating. So, say, for example, when we went to China in November, I was watching keenly to see how that audience would react differently, and they didn't. So at the end, I'm married to a Chinese man, and so I know that the Chinese culture, the Chinese family, they can be tough. And there were people there in absolute floods of tears. And it almost, I think, opened them up more emotionally, because maybe it's even more hidden. When we started, first of all, trying to tour to China, they were saying, oh, no, we don't talk about learning disabilities because that doesn't exist in China. And dementia, don't know if we're interested in that. And so, you know, so many things are hidden away. And I think the thing about Full Mask is because the audience interpret, and in interpreting, they have to work hard to work out exactly what script the actors have got going on in their head, and it ends up in the audience's head. And because they are so engaged intellectually, they also become really quickly emotionally engaged, and it feels like the story is just being performed for you. So actually it becomes a more deep and emotional and almost empathetic experience. So that's why when our accountant, for example, came to see the show, Jeff, he's a great big hardy bloke, he was a blubbering wreck by the end, and he said, I don't know what you've done to me, I don't know why I'm crying like this. And I kind of went, oh well, I do, Jeff, actually. What it is you've been interpreting art. And it was no different in China, apart from the fact that they brought lots of young children, who I was thinking at the beginning, how on earth are these kids going to sit through 70 minutes? And of course, they were impeccably well behaved.
I know some of the things that you do and some of the work that you do, it's kind of awareness and training, if you like, within organisations. And I'm just interested in how you get into that, i.e. how they let you in, if you like, but what the effect of that is perhaps on, you know, some of the people who are receiving the support and care around some of these issues.
I think probably the most interesting example of that has been at the RSC. So say, for example, we do some training called Listening with Your Eyes, which is all about, you know, my work, my specialism is about nonverbal communication and about how when words are taken away, how we can still communicate. It's an odd thing to be talking about on the radio. But to start with, I worked with their whole artistic team. And that was very interesting, and we had a great workshop. And then I had a workshop with all of their front of house team, who at the end were saying, and it's all about this listening with your eyes, I must explain it, it's all about how we communicate non-verbally, how our tone of voice, how we use our eyes, how we use our touch, how we use humour, how we use play. And at the end, the front of house people were saying, this is exactly the training that we needed, because we've been asking for anger management training. And I kind of said, this is not anger management training. And they said, no, it really is, because it's all about de-escalation. It's all about accepting of ideas and play. And they said a few months earlier, they'd asked for anger management training, and they'd been given training in terrorism and how to respond to perhaps a knife attack. And they said, at the RSC, we get people who become a bit shirty because they don't like the seat they've been placed in. So actually, that was the kind of training that they needed. And since then, we've gone on to deliver the training to about, I don't know, 300 staff at the RSC. And they're kind of seeing the worth of going right across front of house, stage management, not only because it's a workshop that talks about dementia and how we care for those living with dementia, but also about actually how we communicate and connect with anybody. How did we get into that? They asked us to do it. And that's what happens with Vamos. You know, we've got a strong website and we've been doing it for a long time, and it's just the kind of reputation goes, and it's exciting.
Well, I'm really looking forward to the show this evening, and Rachel, thank you for your time. Thanks for talking to me.
Not at all. Thank you.
So I'm with James Greaves.
Correct.
And Sarah Nelson.
Hello.
Two of the performers from Finding Joy. And we're fresh from the performance, so they're resting easy.
Still sweating.
Still sweating, nursing some muscles, maybe. And it was a great performance, so well done to both of you.
Thank you.
And I want to start with how easy or stroke difficult it is to approach something like this. Because folks listening, just to describe it very briefly, there's no dialogue, is there?
No.
It's very physical.
No.
And the use of masks means you've got really a kind of fixed face, a Fixed facial expression.
Yeah. The audience interpret our body language, so they're filling in all the information that the characters on stage are feeling or the things that they're thinking. As for approach to it, you know, it's rather different to straight acting. We don't speak. We are completely concealed under the costume and the mask. So we don't get to use our lovely voices. So thanks for coming.
I really love the approach working in mask. I think it's, yes, it's very different to acting in terms of no text, but it's still the same principles. It's still the same body language. It's still the same physicality. It's just we really have to be very specific and clear. And I liken it as well to puppetry. And in terms of puppeteering, you have to be very specific about your action so that the image that you're painting, you're sharing, is very clear. And you know, it's an incredibly accessible form for any audience member all across the world, you know.
It's like watching a silent movie.
Yeah.
You know, if you watch a Chaplin or Laurel and Hardy, the early silence, you know, they're telling the story, they just don't need the words, but they cheat, they use title plates every now and then. We don't, because we're much more clever than them.
Do you think that silence helps with, I was going to use the word pathos, you know, the kind of severity almost of the subject? Do you think it helps sort of amplify some of the sort of emotion?
It generates more empathy, I think, for me, on a very broad brushstroke. I think that we, you know, that's how we kind of started in the world, you know, watching and, you know, reading the world, you know. And so I think it's something that really kicks into our very core of human empathy and instinct and opens you up.
Yeah, I think it does heighten the empathy feeling for the audience, because they're having to work sort of quite hard to interpret us. You know, not consciously, but they are constantly, as I said before, filling in the gaps, trying to work out what we're thinking, what we're feeling. And so that opens them up more. So it's a very sort of interactive kind of way of performance.
And practically, what's it like inside those... what's it like inside that head, I was going to say?
Heads.
I guess it's probably akin to sort of playing Darth Vader or something, isn't it? You've got very sort of...
A lot less money.
Yeah. Is it very restrictive? Is it something you get used to? Does it become intuitive? Or
all of the above.
Okay.
Yeah. It's warm. It's limited vision. They're plastic masks, so they're hard. You know, I've worked with latex masks, so it's very malleable on your own face, and you can really feel every kind of part of the mask. These are quite hard in terms of the plastic. But in terms of its limited vision, I find that really helps articulate the expression of the mask and the character as well, because we are physically looking to where we are. And it gets quite hot under there.
And very occasionally I do get a little bit of claustrophobia. You know, if you're sort of in a box wearing a mask and you can't see anything, you're in the pitch black, you want to take it off quite quick. But, you know, you just have to breathe into it.
Breath's
and crack
very
on.
Important
breath
on
is
levels.
Very important, yeah. Yeah.
And is it similar, Sarah, you've done, I think you mentioned sort of puppeteering and work with puppets. Is it a similar ball game to that, or is it, again, quite different? Because I think as an audience member sitting there, there's a mannequin quality to it, isn't there? Mm-hmm. Is it similar to work within that way?
The principles, I think, of puppetry and mask work are very similar, and the relationship with the audience is very similar in that you're really asking the audience, as James was saying, to work harder to fill in and the gaps, not necessarily the gaps, but just to help interpret the story. But the principles of puppetry and masking, that it is about very clear, defined action. It's about very distinct movement, and rhythm is very much a part of storytelling. The way that the rhythm changes, you know, really helps to portray an emotion, an expression. So yeah, I wouldn't say that we're mannequins as such, but in terms of our movement, it's very specific.
And because the audience are sort of reading the emotions onto the mask, onto us, you know, the mask, the illusion of the mask is that it appears to move. It's a solid object, but, you know, people say, I swear that mask smiled or really cried. But it's just the audience watching the whole physicality of the character on stage and interpreting.
So I'm just interested in terms of being actors. How do you find yourself in productions like this? Is it something that I'm guessing you're led to it by the themes and by the stories, or are there, you've touched on it already, but are there specialisms you develop through
other performances and other bits of work. How do you become part of a production like this?
Well, we all have sort of different backgrounds as actors. I've been doing mask work forever. I've been doing mask work for sort of 30 years. And so I've sort of built up a little network of directors that I've worked with, including Rachel Savage, our artistic director, and she's very passionate about the subjects that we create the shows around. Yeah, I guess keep going. But it's we all have different backgrounds and different sort of ways into this work.
It's bizarre for me. When I was growing up, you know, I've been acting on one sort of hand and then I was dancing on the other side, but never kind of thought that when I grew up and started a career that the principles of acting and then my dance training would kind of morph into this unexpected career doing mask work as well. And so it's just things unravel as they do, you know. We go and study, we go and train, and then you get spat out into the real world. And I think I learnt quite quickly that the more strings you have in your bow, A, it keeps your work challenging and engaging, but it just makes, you know, you're more accessible to work. We're freelance artists. And also I just think in terms of culturally, the theatre's really, you know, integrating a lot more form now. It's not just, you know, X, Y and Z. There's a lot more interdisciplinary practice going on, a lot of forms. So it's it happened accidentally and I love it. It's, you know, mask work is fantastic. And I think it's helped be clearer and more efficient as an actor as well. When you have to
Yeah, that's an interesting point, because when I go back to sort of what one calls straight acting, I find the precision that you need in a mask makes you much more precise when you're speaking, when you're doing a speaking role. And that always sort of filters through back the other way as well.
Two-way street.
And just finally, I'm just interested to get a take from both of you on what you hope people might take away from the production, from the performances.
Well, I hope they've had a good time. Primarily, you know, I want to entertain people as an actor, and so we hope they enjoy the production. It is a very emotional and emotive theme. Dementia. My father died with dementia 2 years ago. It's quite hard doing this show back then, and we do get a lot of people sort of who've gone through the gamut of emotions. You know, from because a lot of gags. It's not a heavy show. It's quite light. We keep it light. A lot of jokes, but there is your word, pathos, as well.
It's also, I find, because we speak to the audience after every show, and I find that is such a, I just think theatre across the board should be doing this. It's actually a really integral part of the show for us, and to have that feedback. And just hearing what some people say who have either gone through it or have, I had one man with a beaming smile come up and give us a big hug and say, I've just been diagnosed with dementia. Thank you for that beautiful show. But he had the biggest smile on his face. And there is literally in the title, finding joy in something that is very challenging, and it's different for every person. But for me, performing it and speaking with people afterwards, I actually hope that people come away with a sense of joy and hope that what's going on for someone with dementia isn't necessarily always bad. You know, that in that imagination and in the mind, there could be happy memories. And it's finding, as for carers and for family as well, it's finding a way to access and accept something that can be very challenging and keeping it light as much as possible. And it is about finding hope, I hope, in the experience. It's not always easy. But, you know, I met someone as well last night after the show who wept, and you could tell that she hadn't wept for a long time and that she was struggling with the support in her family because they weren't coping. And so I hope that also that opened up a door for the family to start talking about how they were feeling, because it's very easy for us to shut off and not talk about the feelings and cope in different ways. So here's to opening up conversation and connecting.
Excellent. I really enjoyed the show, and it's been great to get a chance to talk to you both. For now, Sarah, James, thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Steve, let's start with you. Let's talk about your reaction, your response to the performance.
So, I mean, I've heard quite a lot about Finding Joy. I really, really enjoyed it. Very, very powerful, very moving, but very tender as well. So thoroughly enjoyed it.
Excellent. And Chris, what about you?
Yeah, I loved it. We've seen several of the shows before, and I actually brought my teenage son to come and see this one, who was somewhat ambivalent about it, but actually has really enjoyed it, actually. And it does bring a bit of a tear to the eye, actually. It's quite an emotional little story, actually. Yeah. And I believe it's based on a true story, which actually makes a big difference to the sort of depth to the story, I think.
And there are, I think, some very familiar themes throughout. Certainly if you've got teenage children, you might recognise some of the...
Recognise the behaviours there, but also the other characters as well. So the nurse that was involved in and the doctor as well. I mean, just these little tidbits of character that come through. It's a fabulous story. Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
And you've done, I think, some of the training previously, or done one of the workshops?
Yeah, well, we've both done it actually at different organisations. They do non-verbal communication workshops, which is ideal for the sort of training I do, because I train GPs. And it was a really good insight to how non-verbal communication works in different spheres.
Steve, you've done that as well? You've done some of the training?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I work for the NHS, and we've done quite a lot of training with VAMOS. And as Chris said, it's really, really powerful, and it's an excellent way of training staff in a fun and friendly way.
And do you think it helps people... become more aware and respond better to people with dementia and people that support people?
I mean, Chris obviously would be able to comment better than myself, but I do feel that it just gives you a different insight. It gives you another insight into what it's like to care for somebody with dementia. So, yeah, I think it would.
Excellent.
I think just observation is really important. If you sit and watch or stand and watch somebody, you pick up little things about people, and I think that's what the show shows today. Yeah, really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Okay, so I'm here at the RSC with Giuseppe and with Michael, and it's great to be with you because I'm really keen to get some sort of, I guess, practical perspective around, I suppose, the programme of work linked to finding joy. And there's two or three bits to that, isn't there?
So Vamos leads some really wonderful workshops called Listening with Your Eyes, and it's aimed at working with people who have dementia. We did one of these workshops one day and we realised that it was something that we had to do for all of our staff. The response was completely overwhelming internally. So I think we've done about six since then. So Listening with Your Eyes is a very practical workshop. Rachel led our sessions and then the lovely Honor has led a couple of sessions for us as well, but it's, I think it's probably designed for actors originally. So it's great, first of all, to have someone come in and do a training session with us that gets people on their feet and gets people up and moving. It's not something that, even though we're a theatre, we normally have to sit behind desks and get trained in that kind of tick-boxy way.
So it's really focused on, I suppose, the power and the importance of non-verbal communication.
Yeah.
So for folks listening, let's break that down a little. So really it's sort of body language and sort of tense and
the
approach.
Power of touch. The power of touch. It really breaks down a boundary, and it's not just for those living with dementia. I think it's for anybody really who's struggling or finding places intimidating. Sometimes just taking a hand can really open up a whole new way to communicate with that person. We've had people who, since the training, have encountered patrons who'll stop and freeze at the doors to the auditorium because it's quite a busy circumstance at that moment. There's a lot of things going on, and they'll stop and they'll freeze and they'll look panicked, and their companion starts to worry and starts getting agitated as well. And a lot of the time, all you need to do to break that down is just to touch their hand and say, come with me. And Rachel is all about finding new ways to break down those boundaries, whether that's body language or the way you speak or touch or anything like that.
It's come at a really good time for us as well, because there's so much talk at the moment in theatres or other industries about how appropriate it is to, you know, to touch people or how you react with other people. And so many people were too scared. Oh, I can't take someone's hand. I can't do this. I mustn't overstep the mark. And actually it put faith back into us, being able to take someone's hand when they needed it, and understanding people's body language a bit more. So it's given us a bit more control back, I think, on that side, and how to deal with our customers.
And how was staff in response to that? Because I can imagine some folks might have been a little thrown by sort of the idea of perhaps, I'm paraphrasing slightly, but going on a touching workshop. Some folks might have been a bit thrown to that. But the serious point there is that maybe it's something that's forgotten. It's those bits of communication
absolutely
that got lost.
And at the RSC, we obviously, our main projects revolve around words.
Yeah.
Shakespeare, words, scripts. And for us to strip those away and just think about how our body moves and how we read each other without words, it was a really wonderful
experience.
And
there are a lot of connections made. We have a really diverse team across the organisation. Our front-facing teams are between, I think, 88 and 17. And it was also done internally in our organisation, in the marketing and box office and all those different departments as well. But watching the whole organisation interact and open up and share a little bit of vulnerability with each other was really moving to watch. And the team came out glowing.
Yeah.
And they couldn't wait to start doing these things. And it really has made a difference, I think, to how we operate as a company.
Yeah. Yeah, completely. Even I walked through the theatre the other day, and probably the first workshop we did was about 6 months ago, and people are still talking about it. People stop me and say how wonderful the Vamos work we do is, and people want everyone else to do them, don't they?
Yes.
It sells itself through word of mouth.
Yeah.
So is it something that's translated into other organisations as well, that people picked it up, used it in different ways?
We think that it's not just for our front of house staff. It should be for everybody, even if you perhaps don't even work with people who might have dementia, even if you're in education or you work at the nursery, or it translates, because it's
I think the workshop, when you break it down, it doesn't have to be about people with dementia. It can be about people who have anxiety problems, people with autism, people who don't have English as their first language, or people who are just a little bit awkward, maybe awkward customers, something like that. I think the skills that you learn on that workshop can translate to all these different areas, even if it's a work colleague that you're perhaps struggling with. We think it's fundamental that everybody in the organisation gets
something
the opportunity.
That links, I think, there's a national agenda, isn't there, around dementia friendliness, you know, making communities and places more open and hopefully more accessible to not just individuals that suffer with dementia themselves, but their carers and their network around them.
Yeah, and I think actually if you create a dementia-friendly community, it's not just affecting people who live with dementia, it's affecting a whole other stream of people, as I just mentioned, when you work with the public and when you have open spaces. If you start with a dementia-friendly space, then you're making yourself open to so many other people.
We're so keen to become more open to these different communities, and we had Sharing Joy that visited us, which I'm sure we'll talk about later. But having Sharing Joy, we specifically invited those living with dementia into our building, and it was really moving to see some people who thought that theatre was no longer for them, or thought that these buildings were no longer spaces they could go into and feel safe. And that was it's the complete opposite. And it's difficult to get past that preconception sometimes, I think. But watching the excitement on their faces and the familiarity, and that they knew these spaces, they loved these spaces, and feeling let in to those spaces, I think, was really powerful to see.
And on a wider scale, there are so many people anyway who feel a barrier with the RSC.
Absolutely.
No matter what kind of background they come from. So it enabling people who have never stepped inside the theatre before or any of these spaces to know that we are open for anyone, and we do create work for everybody, or you can just come in and have a cup of coffee and, you know.
As part of this Vamos thing, we've started rolling out Dementia Friends information sessions, which is along with the Alzheimer's Society. So that you get a little badge with those, if you don't know, you get a little badge which you wear. And we've a number of patrons who'll just come in the front door and say thank you, and just point to your badge and say thank you, because that means they know that you have a little bit of an understanding and that you're committed to making them feel welcome. And that tiny little thing of wearing a badge, combined with listening with your eyes and all these other things, we hope will build into this really great community where people can come whenever they feel like they want to.
Let's just pick up on the sharing joy aspect of that, which Michael, you mentioned. To me, there's a piece of work there about, it's kind of about re-engagement rather than engagement.
Is that
what you're trying to get across?
Yeah, I think with our audiences who feel that they can no longer come anymore, most definitely, and I think most people that came to Sharing Joy had perhaps been regular theatre goers with us, and felt that it wasn't a place for them anymore. But since then, we have welcomed them back into typical performances as well as our chill performances and things like that, because they felt comfortable in our hands. Yeah,
and that's often, I think, about the complexity of people's lives, isn't it? It's not perhaps necessarily something you did or didn't do at a time. It's just people's lives get more complex, and therefore, you know, they sort of, people kind of disengage over time, don't they?
So again,
something like this, I think, helps reflect, doesn't it, and look at some of the basics that perhaps, you know, need to be sort of reinvigorated or re-emphasised.
And also having these people coming into our buildings makes us realise things that don't work, but perhaps. Sometimes those living with dementia can struggle with different perception or different changes in light or different changes in level. Mm-hmm. And with all the best will in the world, we can go around looking for things and trying to rectify things. But until we have those people in our spaces, we don't know how they're going to react to those spaces. So we've been able to make some changes and find ways to move around our buildings and to create areas that feel more inviting and comfortable.
Yeah, and above all, I think underlying all of that, it's our attitude that has changed, I think. Because without that, you know, you could change 100 things, and if your attitude's not right, it's still not a welcoming place. And I think this work with Vamos, doing the Listening With Your Eyes workshops, doing Sharing Joy, doing the Dementia Friends information sessions, it has completely changed our attitude to people coming into the theatre.
It's changed our perception. Watching audiences, you just made me think of a moment in Sharing Joy. It was quite a chilled environment, so people could kind of come and go as they pleased. and we were trying to make that as easy as possible. But you, because of listening with your eyes, we learned about different ways of communicating with people or different things that you can read in their body language. And there was a lady who was getting a little bit kind of fidgety and restless, and we couldn't quite work out what it was, but we were trying. It was quite difficult because there was a challenge of trying to make sure she knew that she could leave if she needed to, but also that she could stay if she wanted to, and did she want us to help or did she not want us to help, and where do you stop and where is that line? And Rachel Savage, she and I together kind of helped that lady and worked out what was going on. Turned out she needed a toilet. But you don't know, and watching people after that training, really, it changes how you observe them and it changes how you try to help them. And a lot of the time, just standing nearby is enough because they can kind of look at you and you can then read from that look whether they want you or not. And often they'll just ignore you, and that means they don't want you.
Let's talk a bit about finding joy and some of the performances that you had here, the other place, here in Stratford. There were, I think, as part of the tour of Finding Joy, about 32 performances, not here, but across the country. But at the beginning of November, excitingly, I think you had two or three performances.
We had three here.
And they were sort of, I guess, one was a more traditional performance in that sense, but you had a evening, afternoon.
We had two matinee. Traditional performances, and we had a chill performance on the Saturday matinee. And we've been doing chill performances here for the last, I think it's over a year now. And the concept behind a chill performance is that the audience etiquette is just a bit more relaxed. So we don't change anything with a show. We don't have chill out areas like we would with a relaxed performance. You're still watching the same show, the same finished product, but we're all just aware that you probably may want to leave a bit more. There might be a very quiet noise going on in the background. We welcome babes in arms. It's actually a really wonderful experience when you're in the audience. It is more relaxing for the audience, so people tend to enjoy themselves more and laugh more. We thought it would be really appropriate to do this with Finding Joy because it's also a really dementia-friendly type of performance as well.
And in some ways, that kind of performance is more than traditional. You know, it's a very, very, very old way of performing.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm conscious of where I am and where I'm saying that.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of people drifting in and out, it's not quite that. But
it feels like we're going back to our roots with these chill performances. It's something that's really hard to communicate, especially when it's a new thing that we've been offering here, even though other theatres have been offering them for a while. But we really want to grow and develop them because we think it's something that is so needed in this day and age.
Feeling in that room when it's a chilled performance is the audience is sort of, it sounds funny to say, but they're sort of a little community. They experience it together and their experience of the show is different. The chilled performance of Finding Joy, especially on Saturday, was really moving, just because of the subject matter anyway, but the fact that the audience sort of left as a unit rather than just leaving individually.
Actually,
really,
I just
special.
Want to point out they didn't leave.
Well, that's
I
true,
think,
yes.
I think the show must have come down at about 2:30. We still had huge amounts of audience in the building until 5:00. People didn't want to leave. People wanted to stay and talk and reflect afterwards. We found that with all of the shows that we had for Finding Joy, but especially for the chilled. It just had such a huge impact on people watching that we felt it was really important
to engage with
reflect.
Each other about it a lot more than you don't often see a debate after a show between two people who didn't know each other before the show.
Just wanted to talk or ask you rather finally what person you kind of you take for your involvement in this. I mean, you've touched on some of those things already, but to someone coming cold to this and they were saying to you, well, you know, oh, why should we get involved with that? Why should we entertain doing anything like that? What do you say to them? What knowledge would you impart?
Theatre's for everyone. It's for everyone, and everyone means everyone. I think that was one of the biggest things I took from Vamos's production on Saturday was the chilled performance. It's got no words, Finding Joy. So we had a deaf group in, we had those with autism, we had babes in arms, we had families, we had people living with dementia, we had people with other things that we just didn't know about, and they were just having the time of their lives. And for me, that's what theatre should be.
Yeah.
The reason I got really into this sort of stuff was that my gran said to me, we can't go to the theatre anymore because my grandfather lives with dementia. And I thought, that's not right, and that's also not on them. That's on theatre. And if people like Vamos and if people like us here at the RSC can make theatre open and a welcoming place for those people to be, that's incredible, because we saw on Saturday what theatre can do for people and what it can do to people, and I just thought that was amazing. So yeah, theatre's for everyone, that's what I've learned.
I think that the relationship that has, I want to say developed, but I think it was there pretty instantly. Like, it was almost love at first sight, I'd say, with the RSC and Vamos. It has been such a wonderful relationship over this last, just over a year. They've held our hand every single step of the way. When we've been going, we don't work like that. We're a big organisation. You have to speak to 10 people when, you know, we might be dealing with one person on their side. They've been able to adapt and work with us and have patience with us. And all along the way, beautiful things have been happening and flourishing. And it's something that is not ending here. It's left us with a huge legacy that we want to carry on running with, working with our community, whether they have dementia or just as a community as a whole. I think something that it's reminded me of about working in theatre, especially a regional theatre, is that it's probably a modern day populist equivalent to the church. You know, people come together and you get to watch or be inspired or broaden your horizons by things that subjects that you might not normally encounter, and having that opportunity to afterwards stop and reflect and talk to the audience and share your feelings like that, it kind of reminds me about why we're here and the bottom line of why we do the work we do. I'm sure you'd speak to any kind of theatre maker and the directors that we have here, and it's all about getting your message across, whether it's political or an emotional message or something like that, trying to evoke some kind of feeling in someone. And this has reminded me about how we can do that and connect with our communities and work with them afterwards.
For now, Giuseppe and Michael, thanks so much for helping me explore some of those themes in more depth, and thanks very much for your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Finding Joy was made in association with the Hereford Courtyard and Javadeau. It is funded by Arts Council England and Worcestershire County Council and supported by Gary Wiltshire. Finding Joy's 2018 tour is part of the British Council's UK-Germany 2018 programme, exploring and celebrating cultural connections between the United Kingdom and Germany. For more information on Vamos and their work, go to www.vamostheatre.co.uk. My thanks to Rachel Savage, James Greaves and Sarah Nelson, the players and team at Vamos, Artrix Bromsgrove, Giuseppe McKinnon and Michael Chakraverty, the Royal Shakespeare Company Stratford, and to Mandy Rose at M7PR. The original music used in this programme was composed by Jani Amar for Vamos Theatre. Finding Joy, a documentary, was written and presented by me, James Sandy, and is a King of the Buttons production for 107.5 Switch Radio.